From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency.
Welcome to another edition of the National Press Club Update One podcast. I'm podcast committee member Link Smith, and with this conversation, we are joined by award-winning journalist Jen Judson, currently land warfare reporter for Defense News. Holding a Master of Science degree in journalism from Boston University and a Bachelor of Arts degree from Kenyon College, she has worked with Politico and Inside Defense, serving as the 115th president of the National Press Club. Welcome, Jen Judson.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really great to be back in the Press Club's studio here.
Jen, what inspired you to pursue a degree in journalism?
I think I always wanted to be a journalist. I just kind of was led in many other different directions during college. But when I was little, I even had like a pretend newspaper at home. And so I should have followed that. I also did work in high school on the yearbook, which was had a lot of writing as well, sort of kind of long form journalism rather than the newspaper. So always had it in the back of my mind. But when I went to college, I was convinced that I might make a good lawyer. So I graduated and before applying to law school, decided to work in some law firms. And I did. And I decided that it wasn't for me, fortunately, before applying and attending law school and spending a lot of money there. But I did work in the field of the law for a little bit, working in legal recruiting here in D.C. for a couple of large law firms. And one of them happened to be right across from the National Press Club. It was based in the Willard. It's not there anymore. But I would, you know, come over here and have lunch in the food court on the building next door and walk by it every day. And one day I had a family friend who was a member of the press club and wanted me to come hear Alberto Gonzalez speak, the attorney general, because I was interested in a career in law. But instead I ended up meeting Helen Thomas at a small gathering. I think just ahead of that was a headliner's luncheon, I believe. And I just thought that was really neat talking to her about her career in journalism for a few brief minutes. And it kind of just made me think again. I knew I wasn't happy where I was. I knew I wasn't going to be happy with a legal career. But I knew I loved writing. I loved research. I loved talking to people. And so it kind of inspired me to think about it again. And so I applied to master's programs and ended up attending Boston University to pursue my journalism career.
Over to your earlier career. Tell us a bit more about your time at Politico and Defense News.
So I actually got my start in journalism up in Boston. I was working in community news, but I knew I wanted to come back down to D.C. where I'd been living before to cover policy. I didn't know what kind of policy I wanted to cover or where I would get a job. I just kind of threw my resume down here as much as I possibly could while I was still living up in Boston and working in community news, and was hired by Inside Washington Publishers, which is a trade newsletter organization. And they had several different areas that I could have chosen to write about. One was healthcare policy, which seems more convoluted than defense acquisition, and environmental issues. And the other option was to cover defense, but specifically Army aviation and missile defense. And for some reason at the time, I thought, you know, covering drones and helicopters sounded like a really cool deal. And so I took that job and I was there for 3 years. And I think that working at a trade publication like that really allowed me to get my feet wet and to like understand how to cover Congress, understand that process there, understand the budget process, understand how policy and budget is shaped on the Hill, how the Pentagon influences that, understanding how to read a budget. That's not an easy thing to do, but a huge part of my job still. And I covered defense industry and the intersection and how that influences defense policy and vice versa and how that influences budget decisions on the Hill. And it was a really great experience. And so then I decided it was time to move on and went to Politico for a year where I covered defense a much wider perspective from the Hill. So enjoyed that time, but really wanted a very focused beat. So I ended up taking a job at Defense News to cover land warfare, and I've been there for 8 years. And so it's just been a beat that continues to be very interesting to me, particularly the Army has made tons of strides in terms of how it approaches its acquisition processes. It was a very broken system prior to my covering the Army and probably in the earlier years. So it's kind of a gift that keeps on giving. They never stop making news over at the Army. And so it's been a really fun ride. The other thing is I also cover more internationally as well. So I've had a chance to go to defense conferences abroad, cover exercises, really get out there and like be on the ground with soldiers. And that's been a really great experience and provided a lot of perspective to the reporting that I do on the policy side.
You mentioned Helen Thomas, your encounter.
Yes. Yeah.
Are there other journalists, both broadcast and print, that influenced and have continued to influence you?
I think Mike Friedman is one of the big ones for me. He's had an absolutely impressive career, but the things that he has done throughout his time as a journalist to help influence other journalists to continue on and do this good work is just like immeasurable. You cannot find another journalist who does that kind of mentoring and work that Mike has done. He served as the 113th president, so he was president 2 years before I was, and he led us through COVID and some very tough times and ended his presidency with, you know, dealing with January 6th right around the corner from the press club. Couldn't have picked a better president to have during such a tough time. But he always, I don't know, I guess he just identified that I could be a leader at the press club before I ever did. And, you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to run for president, but he sat me down for like a 2-hour lunch and convinced me otherwise. But he was always there for journalists, no matter what stage of their career they were in. He was always there to offer encouragement and support. And, you know, I think, you know, he'll be a guiding light for so many. He'll continue to be that for me.
Let's get over to Press Freedom.
Yes.
All right. As president of the National Press Club, you maintained a strong advocacy for press freedom to include focus on the unjust detainment of journalists in such countries as Ethiopia and India.
Absolutely, yes.
To these and other countries, can you highlight the press freedom advocacy of the National Press Club?
Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about here. You know, I like to say, like, we put out a lot of statements throughout the year. You saw that in my presidency, you saw that in Eileen O'Reilly's presidency, and I'm sure you'll continue to see that in Emily Wilkins' term. I think one of the biggest areas of focus for me was continuing to try to bring Austin Tice home. He's been in Syria in an undisclosed prison somewhere. At the time, we hit the 10-year mark. We're now at well over 11 years, but we hit 10 years. I really feel like Austin has a specific place in my heart. We are the same age. I just wish we all had him and he was doing his journalism over the last 10 years rather than being somewhere in a prison being held as a political pawn. You know, obviously it seems like we're not making a lot of progress, but I do think that behind the scenes there is work being done all the time, and it's a very frustrating situation.
How satisfied are you with the United States government regards journalists that are imprisoned unjustly around the world?
I mean, Austin Tice makes me immediately say I'm not satisfied. I think we should be doing everything we can to get him out, and I don't think that that's being done. Of course, I don't have privy to what's happening behind the scenes necessarily, but You know, I think that there are some months where it feels like there's some forward movement, but then, you know, you hear things through the grapevine where you're taking steps back again. And I can't imagine how frustrating that must be for the Tice family and all of his friends to continue to hear this thing.
And the field of journalism, that's frustrating.
Just to continue to keep Austin Tice, like, in the forefront of everyone's mind, is that's difficult, and you have to keep it in the forefront of the president's mind and, you know, in the forefront of those in his administration who should be working on this. So, you know, we continue to call on the president to do everything he can to get him out, and I hope that this is going to be the year for him. I think some of the other work that we did on press freedom when I was president, we paid quite a bit of attention to some of the things that were happening in India, and ultimately gave the Aubuchon Award for International for Press Freedom on the international side to Rana Ayub. She's a correspondent for the Washington Post, partly. But we actually, when we awarded her that, she, at the time, I think all of her assets were frozen by the government because they were accusing her of some sort of embezzlement of COVID funds. I mean, all of this is completely untrue. And when we called her to tell her that she had won this award, she was literally in a safe house hiding because she had recently reported on some issues that the government was unhappy about. The story has continued for her. I mean, it just continues to be difficult, and she continues to stay in India and do reporting and face very difficult conditions. Eileen O'Reilly did an interview with her over this past year to see how things are going. I mean, not much has changed in terms of the level of harassment that she faces from parts of the public and from the government, but she continues to do her reporting. And so I commend her and I encourage her to keep doing that. And if you really want a sense of what press freedom is like in India, or the lack of press freedom is like in India, tune into the Press Club's website and check out her speech from the Fourth Estate Awards when she was able to accept her award in person because she was doing a fellowship in the United States, luckily at the time was able to get out of India, but she expressed concern about returning and what would be in store for her when she came back, especially after speaking against the government. And that continues to be an issue. I mean, Defense News has a journalist, Vivek Raghuvanshi, who has been in prison since, I think it was May of last year. We have had no luck getting in touch with him, his family, his lawyer. And so, you know, we're looking for help to be able to get in touch with his family or his lawyers or something so that we can try to help as best we can. To, you know, convince the powers that be that he's actually in jail for espionage claims. If he is not a spy, there's no evidence that he committed espionage whatsoever. There are reports out there that say that he was put in prison because of something he reported negatively. I don't want to really go into the details of it, but He reported about something negative relating to somebody in the government or an associate of somebody in the government. And so there are reports that may be why he's in prison. I mean, that's totally unverified at this point. We actually don't have any evidence in our archives of that reporting. But we do know that he was not a spy. He should not be in jail for espionage. He is a journalist doing journalistic work. And we hope that he will be released from prison, but we just don't know what the status of his situation is in India because we are not able to get in touch with anybody. So if anyone's out there listening who wants to help us get in touch, that would be great. It's just we're seeing more and more examples of this in India. You write something negative about an official, you know, you end up in jail or they freeze your assets or you have to go into hiding. And that should not be how journalists function in society.
Let's talk about Ethiopia. Where is press freedom in Ethiopia?
I mean, it still continues to be a major issue. I haven't followed it as closely since my presidency ended, but You know, at the time, there were, I think, three or four journalists we were watching who were imprisoned while I was president, I think, early on in 2022. And then they were released, I think, in April. If you want to know whether our statements have any effect on press freedom, they do. And here's why. We had an Ethiopian journalist write to us. Name is Temerat Nagera. And that journalist was detained illegally by the Ethiopian government for critical reporting. And we released a press statement in March about that. And this journalist wrote to us and said, "Your statement contributed for my safety and future release on April 6, 2022. But what you didn't know on the day of your statement's release, I was being transferred to a larger prison from the small police station I was detained. The VOA, Amharic, and Afan Oromo program produced news by quoting your press release and mixing it with my picture exactly the very night I was introduced to a prison population with 3,000 prisoners. Your statement and the VOA story probably saved my life because of your statement. I was welcomed as a dissident rather than as a petty criminal the government wanted to paint me. I have always wanted to say thank you for your statement, and please keep speaking for all journalists who need your voice." So we were able to somehow keep him safe in prison, and then eventually he was released. So I'm so glad that that had that kind of effect on that journalist. So we'll continue to do things like that, and hopefully that has the same effect going forward.
Let's get over to Gaza.
Yeah.
The Committee to Protect Journalists in New York reports a record death toll. Why is it so deadly?
Here's one of the things that I think is so deadly about Gaza. There's no safe place to work as a reporter. A lot of the news offices in Gaza have been damaged, and so journalists don't have places to work. They don't have power. They have communication outages, food and water. It's really hard to work. And so you're having to flee with your families to these places where you don't know if you're going to get hit by something. I mean, lots of journalists have lost their families in addition to journalists being killed as well. And we've seen many reports on, you know, somebody's entire family getting killed. I mean, it's just constant missile attacks, constant rocket attacks. And they're in places where they could potentially get hit. But, you know, there's also cases where, you know, the Israeli military is being accused of just like shooting somebody who's well marked as press, and if that doesn't sound eerily familiar, you may recall Shireen Abu Akleh was killed. This is well before the Gaza, the Palestinian, the war right now, the Israeli Hamas war. That, you know, she was just reporting and was shot in the neck in between her helmet and her press vest by Israeli military, and we still do not have an independent report or an FBI investigation report about what happened there. You know, the Israeli government's claiming it was an accident, but, you know, when you're standing there and you're clearly marked as press and you're still getting hit, you know, is that, you know, that just contributes to, you know, how deadly this environment is, that you ignore that's a rule of war. You do not aim or attack journalists who are in the field. Try your best not to hit them, and that's not the case. I mean, it's a concentrated area. It's a fog of war. They're mixed in with, you know, families fleeing, and it's just been continuous attacks. So I think that's probably many of the things, if not all the things, that are contributing to this kind of death toll of journalists. But, you know, I would hope, and I think CPJ has called for this as well, is just, you know, for both sides to be, you know, the Israeli government to be aware and the Israeli military to be more aware of press in the field. It's hard, actually, too, because the press may not be able to have the equipment to mark themselves as press as easily. I think that there was a report that a lot of them didn't have protective gear or couldn't obtain protective gear to you know, somewhat protect themselves out in the field when there's bullets firing and rockets landing on them. No helmets, no flak vests. But it just paying attention to the rules of order in war, you know, yes, there's the fog of war, but you have to be very careful about what you're aiming at and shooting at. And I don't think that's the case in Gaza at all.
Indeed, former National Press Club President Mike Friedman said, mm-hmm. if you silence the media, you silence the voice of the people.
Right.
From your perspective, today in 2024, do we have more press freedom around the world or less press freedom around the world? Let's pick a number than, say, 50 years ago.
I think it depends on where you are. But just from my perspective, in the U.S., I would say the U.S. may have less press freedom. I mean, and I think it's because there's less of a respect for what we do. Media has become more of a target. You know, if there was a reporter who was murdered for what he was writing about in Vegas during my presidency, it's just you see government officials targeting media for their reporting more here. And that's we actually awarded our domestic Aubuchon Award to Josh Renault from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for reporting that he did, and he was basically accused by the governor for having a vendetta against him and for hacking a public service website, none of which was true. But if a governor can go out and make false claims against a reporter for doing their job, you know, what does that say about our world now in the U.S.? You know, obviously press freedom has been a problem for other countries for much longer, but I would say it is eroding in the U.S., and I think there's so many factors to think about. And yes, you know, of course, we all still have a right to publish things, and we do, and we're not censored necessarily. But I think threats and things like that can censor reporters from wanting to come out with the truth. And it's a slippery slope, and it's dangerous, because if you're censoring journalists, then you are essentially attacking democracy, because we are supposed to be shining light for the American people. We're supposed to be here to basically help uncover corruption, to ensure that your tax dollars are being spent in the best way possible. You know, there's so many reasons why we do what we do. And I think you'd be hard pressed to find a reporter out there who doesn't want to do it for that reason. Like, we all, most journalists, we're not in it for the money, let me tell you. Salaries are not high. I think unless you're in broadcast journalism at the highest level, you know, me as a print journalist, I'm not in it for the money. I'll never be able to be in it for the money. I'm doing it because I feel that it's important to be able to write about the first draft of history, if you will, accurately and fairly, and to write the good stories and the bad stories about our country. And if we're not able to do that safely or without fear of retribution, then that's an erosion of democracy.
Jen Judson, 115th president of the National Press Club and land warfare reporter, Defense News, thank you for joining us on the National Press Club Update 1 podcast.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You have been listening to Update 1, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update 1, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.